Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, it's the question in Florida right now, just how much vaccine supply does the state have on hand? You see, earlier this week, new White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Florida has only distributed about half of its COVID vaccines. Governor Ron DeSantis called that comment completely disingenuous, insinuating that Florida was slow to distribute doses. The governor says the state is holding on to doses needed for seniors who have received their first shot but are still awaiting their second one.
Yeah, it was a bit of a back and forth this week that was really eye-opening because it contradicts what the governor and other state officials have been saying about the state's vaccination program for weeks. Here's what the governor said on January 4th.
Hospitals that do not do a good job of getting the vaccine out will have their allocations transferred to hospitals that are doing a good job in getting the vaccine out. We do not want vaccine to just be idle at some hospital system.
Then Jared Moskowitz, the head of the state's Division of Emergency Management, appeared here on this program in the Florida Roundup on Friday, January 8th, and told us this.
A lot of the hospitals felt that they had a moral obligation to hold on to the second dose, even though that was not the instructions given by the federal government or us. And quite frankly, that's because the federal government, Operation Warp Speed, has not been able to instill confidence that the second shot is going to arrive or when it's going to arrive.
And of course, millions of Florida residents are hoping the vaccine supply increases quickly. So where do things stand with the state's supply of COVID-19 shots? Let us know your thoughts and questions. We'll go to your calls and tweets in a few minutes. Call us up now anywhere in the state on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800, or tweet us at Florida Roundup.
We'll get to your calls and tweets in just a few moments. Ben Konar covers healthcare for the Miami Herald and joins us from South Florida. Ben, the governor said holding back the second doses that he acknowledged this week is following the FDA's recommendations. Is that true? What can you tell us?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a situation that's been in flux since we started receiving vaccine doses late last year. You know, as you mentioned in your intro, Jared Moskowitz has been the primary communicator with reporters about this process. And we were always under the impression that FDA guidance was, in fact, to earn the doses you get, use them as quickly as possible, and you will continue to get more. We just saw a White House press briefing today where they were lauding about seven states for turning around these doses really quickly, more quickly than others. Florida was not in that category. According to the latest data we have, which is organized by Bloomberg, Florida has used about 1.8 million of the 3.1 million shots, doses that have been delivered here. So, you know, it's definitely unclear at this point.
Yeah, it's also unclear. The governor talked about hospitals giving out all their doses. Director Moskowitz talked about hospitals. Is that somehow seen as a different supply chain or a supply amount than the state? I'm using air quotes there, Ben, but the State Department of Health supply?
No, I mean, there's one supply, right? So the way this works is that the manufacturers that create the vaccines are communicating with the federal government. The federal government is kind of the go-between between the states and the vaccine manufacturers. So the system, the way it's set up, you know, the federal government is asking the manufacturers how many doses they have. The states are telling the federal government how many doses they need and are ready for. And then there's kind of that middle person, you know, the federal government in this case. Mm-hmm. But once it gets from the manufacturers to Florida, it goes to the Division of Emergency Management. And the Division of Emergency Management has been the pivot point for all vaccines entering the state, which is, you know, it's not how other states are doing it. A lot of public health departments are kind of in charge of this in other states.
Right.
But here in Florida, it hasn't been that case.
Fewer Floridians have been vaccinated over the past week compared to a week earlier, according to the data that was released this morning from the Florida Department of Health. About 23% fewer people have gotten their first doses this week compared to a week ago. Less than 300,000 people received first doses in the past week. Any idea why this is dropping off?
we haven't had an explanation that really lays that out clearly. As you know, we've mentioned this back and forth where DeSantis says that there's not enough doses, and then the White House says, well, you're not using the doses you already have. We don't have really detailed data on where all these vaccines are going. Yeah. It would be great if we did. I believe the state has access to that. They know exactly where they've shipped the vaccine so far, which entities have used them. They've alluded to that when they're cutting off certain hospitals from their supply. So, you know, another thing that I've heard kind of floated around is that some of the hospitals who kind of bit off more than they could chew and scheduled too many appointments too soon. And that's why some of them were having to cancel appointments. But really, you know, everything we're talking about here is a symptom of the same problem, which is that there hasn't been a centralized, coordinated, public health focused distribution effort here in Florida.
Ben Konark is with us. He is a healthcare reporter for the Miami Herald. Your phone calls at 305-995-1800 in just a matter of moments. Ben, regarding this kind of communication and centralized information, I want to play an exchange between two lawmakers that happened this week in Tallahassee. It was Wednesday. The Florida Surgeon General appeared before the Florida House subcommittee. He made some introductory remarks, and then the subcommittee's Republican chair, Will Robinson, said his office would be happy to set up a meeting with the Surgeon General. But
At this time, there's no time for questions for Ms. Surgeon General, but I recognize.
If I could just ask you a question.
So this is the top Democrat on this subcommittee, Carlos Guillermo Smith, interrupting. He noted that the Surgeon General had not appeared before the full Florida House since before the pandemic began last spring.
Can you explain to the members of the committee and to really our constituents why our Surgeon General can't answer questions publicly? I think they deserve answers.
Now, the answer from the Republican chair of this subcommittee was that the meeting's agenda called for the Surgeon General to be introduced to the subcommittee members, but not answer any questions, similar to how other department heads are introduced.
You can contact his office and schedule a meeting, and we would be happy to help coordinate that and do the best we can.
The top Democrat then went on to characterize the hearing this way.
I'm disappointed that he can't answer questions publicly, and I think that it just contributes to the perception that this process is a sham. If we cannot be able to ask legitimate questions to the top public health officer in this state.
The committee's chair disagreed and then dismissed the Surgeon General and then moved on with that next agenda item for that subcommittee hearing. So Ben Konark with the Miami Herald, how is the state communicating with the public? If the Surgeon General is not taking questions from Florida House members, how is information that the state is collecting getting out?
That's a great question. And it's just been a continuing theme of this pandemic. I mean, we all remember that moment, or at least I think most reporters remember the moment where, the Surgeon General was kind of ushered away from the microphone. And that was really his last public appearance. And it's just, it's been sort of surreal from a reporter standpoint. We're here in the midst of a generational public health crisis, and it's been incredibly difficult to get public health officials who work for the State Department of Health to talk to us. I just did a story on a variant and where the UK strain is located in Florida, and that was, you know, a long time of trying to get the Department of Health to disclose that information. Thankfully, they did eventually, but it seems like every piece of information you try to get out of the Department of Health is a struggle. And I just don't understand why that is. It is obvious that the governor here in Florida has kind of taken the lead and taken the helm of this coronavirus response as the official messenger between the public. But he doesn't have any public health expertise, and even our state Surgeon General really doesn't have any public health background. So we've just been lacking that perspective here in Florida really since March.
It's the Florida Roundup. What are your questions about Florida's vaccination supply? 305-995-1800. Marlene is on hold in Miami. Hey, Marlene, go ahead.
Hi, I'm concerned about distribution in South Florida, and in my mind, I believe partially it's political. We're two blue counties. We're also the biggest populations. And why are like CVS pharmacies around us in the surrounding counties, Monroe and Palm Beach? There's distribution through those channels, but yet not here. Together, I think Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach are one-third the population of the state. We have the highest COVID transmission rates, the highest death rates, yet I don't believe that we're receiving vaccines in proportion to our population. What can we do about it? What's going on?
Yeah, Marlene, thanks for that. Ben Konark with the Miami Herald. The CVS and Walgreens efforts do have a federal component. But, you know, certainly there's an enormous amount of frustration. People feel that the distribution has been rocky and chaotic in some places. And what about South Florida in particular?
Yeah, sure. So it does seem like South Florida is getting its fair share of vaccines just from, you know, if you look at the counties that and the vaccination rates as far as the percentage of that county that's been vaccinated so far, Palm Beach is actually at the top of that. And, you know, you have that's almost 12%. So I don't really see it as a blue state, red state issue. I mean, there's a lot. Part of this is there's a lot of different distribution entities, right? You have hospitals in South Florida who have been doing it really since before anyone else in the state. You have the county here in Miami-Dade taking over a lot of the distribution and starting to, you know, kind of start up their own infrastructure. So it might look that way. And I think part of that perception comes from this kind of lack of an organized effort and an organized communication about how this is happening and why this is happening. Mm-hmm. Again, we just haven't had that expressed to the public in a way that's easy to understand.
We're going to continue to get some insights about that as we welcome Stephanie Colombini. She reports on healthcare news for WUSF in Tampa. Hey, Stephanie, thanks for being with us. You know, obviously supply is limited for everyone, but there's another category you've been looking into, people under the age of 65 who have underlying health issues. Technically, they're supposed to be able to access a COVID vaccine, but they're having trouble. What are you learning about this?
Yeah, it's been really complicated. The way the state outlined it in the executive order was that hospital providers could deem somebody to be extremely vulnerable. There's really no guidance about how to do that. Are there certain health conditions? Does somebody have to be inpatient? Things like that. So it's kind of been left up to hospitals to decide themselves. What we're seeing is that a lot of hospitals just aren't even doing it. They've, you know, used up all of their supply on health workers or other people in the community. And then other hospitals are kind of doing it quietly, contacting patients on a case-by-case basis. We did see this week Jackson Health System in Miami announced that they would offer some supplies, and they did make it public on their Facebook page, specific conditions people had to have. It was 55 and older. You had to be a county resident. And so that's a small group of people, but it's, you know, there's a lot of people who fall into that category. And I think what people are looking for is clarity right now, because no one knows if they qualify.
We have a call for you right now. It's Fernando in Cocoa Beach. Fernando, do you have a pre-existing condition?
Yes, I do. I have cardiac and diabetic.
And you've had trouble getting a vaccine?
Absolutely. I've been on the line for the last of the three Publix setups that the government had, and all three of them, I waited an hour and a half, and two terminals in front of me, two computers, refreshing continuously, forget it, totally crapped out. And the other one was the Eventbrite. That's the other one that Florida's got, and I'm booked on that. I was called twice and told, well, pick a time. I tried twice. 3 days, every 15 minutes, they were all booked.
Oh, wow. Okay, Fernando, I'm so sorry you're struggling, and I know you're not alone. Thanks for the call. Stephanie Colombini, what about the thousands of residents out there like Fernando who are supposed to have access, but they cannot make their way through this thicket of portal problems and other issues that are preventing them from getting the shot? What should they do?
It's unbelievably frustrating. And I would say contact their local hospitals if they can, because to be honest, I don't even think county health departments can necessarily vaccinate people under 65 who are deemed extremely vulnerable. It kind of was that language of hospital providers. We haven't gotten a lot of information about it, so it might be on a case-by-case basis, but I would contact your health provider and see what they can do to help. I can imagine it's extremely frustrating because these are people who already have severe health problems, are already worried about being more negatively affected by COVID-19 than somebody who doesn't have these conditions. So it's a tough time.
Here's a tweet from a listener. The state should implement a waitlist system. Many other states have done that. It's more effective, less stressful. Okay, let's talk about some of the other opportunities for vaccination, particularly public stores. Those appointments fill up the second they're made available, and that's even been criticized, Stephanie, because Publix tends to serve more affluent communities.
Exactly. We saw some appointments open up this morning. Over a couple hundred Publix are now involved in this, and they opened up new sites this morning, and those appointments were eaten up, you know, pretty quickly. So, you know, it's the same thing of people fighting online for the county sites. It's that same kind of struggle. Obviously, for some people, it is helpful to have the Publix right there in their neighborhood better than the drive-through site. But the fact of the matter is you don't often find Publixes in underserved communities. And so that kind of ties with the racial disparities we're seeing in these vaccination sites. The state isn't, you know, partnering with pharmacies that you do see in those kind of neighborhoods. It is a lot of, you know, Publix is more in affluent areas. So it's that same struggle where the people who might need this the most are not really able to access it.
You know, there's a new website the state just debuted to pre-register for your shot. Here it is, myvaccine.fl.gov, myvaccine.fl.gov. Hayes in Jacksonville, go ahead. You're on the air.
We have a whole nother half of this vaccine we can distribute. Why do we not just distribute it at this point already? Do we not have like a steady supply to give out at this point?
You know, that gets back, Stephanie, to what Tom and Ben Konark were talking about a minute ago, the overall supply.
It's really confusing because, you know, Governor DeSantis was one of the first people to kind of float the idea of like, why don't we just give out all the first dose, you know, and then the Biden administration said that is the plan. Don't hold back second doses. And now we are seeing the state kind of change course and they do want to hold back second doses. We're seeing that problem with hospitals. When I was looking into how vulnerable patients, you know, to see if any hospitals were vaccinating them, a lot of hospitals in Central Florida, Tampa Bay region said no, because we don't have any first dose supply to give out. We've been instructed to dedicate our second dose supply to second doses, and we can't offer new vaccine appointments to anybody.
Again, this new portal is myvaccine.fl.gov. If you don't have internet access, you're asked to call 866-200-3762. Apparently, though, Stephanie, it doesn't allow you to enter risk factors, just your age and whether or not you're a healthcare worker.
Yeah, I just tried, you know, I don't have any health conditions, but I just wanted to see what would happen to test it out for people who are extremely vulnerable, because it is listed on that sign-up site that those people qualify to get in line. And so I went through the sign-up. They asked if you're a health worker. I said, no. They asked, you know, are you a Florida resident? I said, yes. I entered my birth year, which is
not 65. Hold that thought, Stephanie, because lots more to come, Tom, as we continue the conversation.
305-995-1800 to add your voice to the conversation about vaccinations in Florida. Florida Roundup continues after this. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Another week where we're talking about vaccinations in Florida. We want to hear your stories, your questions, concerns, maybe your successes in scheduling or getting a dose of COVID-19 vaccine. 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Ben Konark covers healthcare for the Miami Herald. He is still along with us. Stephanie Colombini reports on healthcare for our partner station in Tampa, WUSF, and she remains on the line as well. Ben, earlier you talked about trying to get some information on these new strains of COVID-19 that have appeared in the United States and at least one appearing here in Florida, the UK strain. What do you know about it here in the Sunshine State?
Sure. So there's a few different, you know, strains or variants of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 that scientists are particularly concerned about. They're called variants of concern. The one you just alluded to, the B117, is also known as a UK strain. It was named after where it first started popping up, and it quickly became the dominant strain in the UK and Ireland, and it's, you know, rapidly spread across the globe ever since. You know, scientists are learning more about this strain. The reason they know it's different is because it contains several mutations that, you know, make it a different version of this virus. One of the mutations is up in the spike protein, which is the part of the virus that kind of binds with the, you know, cells in your throat and nose. That is believed to be increasing the transmissibility or how contagious this virus is. So that's the big concern. And here in Florida, we already know that we have it in 19 counties, and we're just not sure how prevalent it is yet, but it seems to be quite prevalent here.
Lots of concern about this new variant. What are your COVID-19 vaccination questions? 305-995-1800. Sebastian in Lakeland. Sebastian, thanks for your call. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for listening to me. I just wanted to say, and to this team, you know, I actually, my team takes concerns from patients who are, or folks who are trying to get the vaccine for a local hospital system. We continue to hear from them, you know, the problems they're facing, the frustrations they have. And, you know, currently they're routing it to us. A local hospital is doing the best we can with the supply we've been given. You know, I was wondering if you all had any suggestions for folks who are feeling that, you know, that pain, where they, you know, might be able to get to a place that's more effective or somewhere that can actually help resolve this. Because as much as we want to do more, you know, we're limited based on the supply we've received.
Can you tell us, Sebastian, how much supply do you have? Can you tell us what hospital system you're affiliated with?
You know, I don't want to say this. I don't want to speak out of line. You know, I'm pretty low on the totem pole here. We received a set number of doses and ended up using them for the most part, I believe, for staff. You know, I was one of those lucky enough to receive a vaccine. I'm very appreciative of that. But it's just one of those issues that, you know, I believe because there's not a central real authority directing traffic, it's falling to the hospitals to be responsible. And patients feel that we also should have, I don't know, been managing how much vaccine doses we got or how we're offering it. And it's been very difficult, you know, for me personally and for our team fielding these questions.
I'm sure. And thanks for that insight from inside a hospital. Stephanie Colombini, what about that? It's interesting to hear his perspective. And as he pointed out, he's one of the frontline healthcare workers who was lucky enough to be vaccinated himself.
Yeah, it's got to be tough because, I mean, people are desperate and they're calling anywhere they can. And I know a lot of people don't have answers and they'd love to give people every answer they can. So I can imagine that's got to be frustrating. Hospitals are kind of in limbo right now, it seems. I've heard from some in the Tampa Bay region that said, we have not been notified when or if we'll get future first dose supply. So it seems kind of unclear right now if the state is going to shift gears and kind of direct all supplies to county health departments, private pharmacies like Publix, and that's it for hospitals. Or once the federal government does send more doses, can we expect hospitals to continue to be distributors? It's up in the air, and I know hospitals themselves have a lot of questions.
Next caller, Ed in Lady Lake. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. You're on the radio.
Yes, I had a caller say that he got kicked off the Publix vaccination website. And I tried 3 different days this morning. I finally did get a chance to enter my information. And when I didn't fill all the information in correctly, it sent me back to correct it. Well, if that happens, then you have to start all over again. So I suggest anybody's doing that, be careful not to make a mistake. But then at the end, when you put the date in, I picked a date that they offered. And then when I clicked the submit button, it said that date was no longer available. So their website doesn't save the information fast enough for the next clients, so they have some serious problems with their website. So,
yeah. And I know that Publix opened up that appointment system at 6 a.m. today. They said they had 300,000 website requests for 30,000 appointments. What was your fate ultimately?
Well, ultimately, after it failed twice, on the third failure, it thought I was a robot and didn't let me save at all when I had all the information finally correct.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't allow robots, so you have to click a button that says, I am not a robot. So it didn't present that button to me after.
So you were unsuccessful in getting an appointment, Ed?
That's right. It failed.
I'm sorry to hear that. Ed in Lady Lake, Publix says that the next allotment, Melissa, of appointments, it will be accepting online beginning 6 a.m. on Wednesday.
And, of course, they will immediately be filled because people are just standing at the ready at their keyboards. I mean, Ben Konark, I know you've been covering this too. The desperation, the frantic nature of this is what we're seeing all over the state. What about the projections from the Biden White House of dramatically ramping up supply? As you hear more about this, could we potentially see enough more supply coming online in the next weeks and months that people don't feel this sense of frantic desperation to try to get access to these few shots?
Yeah, that's right, Melissa. You know, I think that we can all feel pretty optimistic about the long-term, outlook for supply. We have good news coming out about Johnson & Johnson, about Novavax, these other vaccine candidates that should be approved by the FDA, or rather authorized on an emergency basis by the FDA soon. You know, we're dealing with an extremely limited supply right now, and it is still further along than I think a lot of experts thought we would be even 6 or 7 months ago. So big picture, I think that it's reasonable to be optimistic about a good chunk of the state being vaccinated by, let's say, the end of, May. But, in the short term, again, it's exactly how you described it. It's desperation. We set up a call out for seniors to write us about their kind of attempts to get a vaccine. And it's heartbreaking. It's like every 5 minutes we get an email notification about somebody, and the stories are all very sad. So I guess I just, like Stephanie, I wish that I had a place to send these folks, some kind of centralized hotline or way to field all these people and get them on a reasonable waiting list, which doesn't seem like it should be that difficult to do.
Before we say goodbye to you, Ben, and to Stephanie, let's squeeze in one more call in Pembroke Pines, Broward County. Marcy, thanks for calling in. You're on the radio. Marcy, you with us in Pembroke Pines? Marcy is not there, but she wanted to talk about her thought about younger people getting preferential treatment due to their jobs. As we've seen, Stephanie, the governor's eligibility is 65 and over, healthcare workers with direct contact with the virus, and then those with underlying conditions. But we've all anecdotally heard stories as reporters about people who don't fit any of those qualifications still successfully getting vaccines, haven't we?
Yeah, it's something about luck where maybe if you know the right people and it's the end of the day and they might be running out of doses, people didn't show up for their appointments, and all of a sudden that dose is going to expire in an hour, might as well get it in an arm. That we've heard anecdotally about people getting opportunities like that. Also some rumors about personal connections and, once again, the rich and powerful kind of getting to the front of the line. But there definitely needs to be improvements with equitable access.
Yeah, across ages, across races, across income levels, for that matter, as well. Something certainly bear watching in the days and weeks ahead. Stephanie Colombini reports on healthcare for our sister station in Tampa, WUSF. Stephanie, thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you.
And Ben Konark, always a pleasure to have you as well, healthcare reporter for the Miami Herald. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. Thanks, Melissa.
Well, when national pharmacy chains CVS and Walgreens weren't vaccinating residents and staff at long-term care facilities fast enough, Governor DeSantis signed a $24 million contract with a subsidiary of the Miami engineering and emergency management firm CDR McGuire. He charged them with staffing up and getting the job done.
But the favorite vendor had no experience working in long-term care facilities, and the result has been a rush to vaccinate. Some officials from long-term care facilities have told us the effort's been rife with miscommunication, frustration, misinformation even, that has discouraged some people from getting vaccinated.
Veronica Cato is CEO of the Florida Assisted Living Association. She joins us now. Veronica, thanks for being with us on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you. Let's begin with the good news. The state says it has administered first doses of vaccine at virtually all of Florida's nursing homes and assisted living facilities. Great to hear that. At the same time, there have been reports of chaos and misinformation in some spots after the state signed the contract with CDR McGuire to roll this out. What can you attribute those problems to?
Well, I think one thing you just mentioned was virtually all have been administered, because I can say as of today, there are still some assisted living facilities in the state that have not received their first clinic. And that has to do with the misinformation and communication breakdowns when you enact something at warp speed and then bring in a third party provider, which was needed, but with little time to implement effectively. And what I mean by that is they were brought in about the 7th of January and were given an initiative to start giving vaccines on Monday the 11th. And this is CDR McGuire. That is also the same date that Walgreens and CVS were to begin their first clinics. When you're trying to gather information from two entities that were already in the process of scheduling appointments, and then transferring them to another entity, you're bound to lose people in the mix of it. Also, what contributed a lot to, I think, the mishaps in the rollout is they called people on a Friday and expected them to complete documents by Monday and have staff come in without being able to give them adequate notice to come in, which has affected the vaccination rate in employees, let alone the hesitancy that was already there for the trust in the vaccine. Now, many employees weren't able to get the vaccine because the providers didn't have the ability to say, be here Tuesday at 12, because they were sometimes knocking on the door at Tuesday at the same time they were getting the communication.
Getting the communication. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. So talk more about that, the challenge to get high vaccination rates among staff at the state's long-term care facilities. Certainly, that's a population you'd want to see vaccinated, but that has sometimes been difficult. Why?
Well, with the federal rollout of, well, the long-term care program that was federally backed with Walgreens and CVS did have a state element in how it was rolled out. So nursing homes were rolled out in phase 1A and assisted living facilities were pushed to 1B. In many states around the country, assisted living facilities received their clinics the same time as the nursing homes. And there was a reasoning at the state level for doing it this way. However, that created a delay. And at the same time, the governor was saying that long-term care facilities would be first. But in the midst of that, right before December, before Christmas, then he announced that 65 and older would start getting it in the general population. And assisted living facilities hadn't even had an appointment to have them come in and do the vaccine. And that's when it became a critical time to speak up.
How frustrated are you by all of this? I can hear some frustration in your voice, frankly.
And I don't mean to say it that way, because the frustration, I think, is kind of tempered out a little bit. But at that point in time, it was very frustrating. I think what continued to be frustrating, while the partnerships, I have to say, with CDR McGuire, CVS and Walgreens have been exceptional once they were brought in and we had the ability to speak with them. And I can email them at any time and say, this community is telling me that they don't know who's supposed to do the vaccination. They have been very responsive, let me say that. But at the same time, the expectations that they were given, thinking that you can vaccinate over 3,100 communities in less than 3 weeks time is extremely stressful and strenuous on them as well.
Sure.
So then that workload just passed on to providers.
Follow up for you. What about misinformation about the vaccine and whether that might have spread to staff at long-term care facilities? That even some healthcare workers around the state are skeptical about the vaccination's effectiveness and safety. How to combat that?
To combat that, it is education, but it's also time. And although, you know, we as a general society want our healthcare providers to jump in and get the shot, they also have to have a trust level. So what employees have been asking and what providers have been doing is, for those who have taken the vaccine, they've been sharing their experience. They've been sharing if they've had any adverse reactions. As information comes out through the CDC or the pharmaceutical companies, we're providing that information to the employees. Some communities are even offering incentives, so of gift cards if they choose to get the vaccine. And quite frankly, some providers across the state have started talking about if they're going to make it mandatory by a certain date in 2021, that all of their employees have this vaccine. That I think will affect the staffing at some point, because it's going to push employees to truly make a decision if they want to continue working in healthcare, which is a very strenuous, field right now. But what we're currently seeing is about 50% of the residents that get staff are, 70% of our residents in assisted living have been receiving the vaccine, while 35% of staff are getting the vaccine. Hmm. We need that to improve statewide. And we need them to tell us what it is they need to feel safe. What I've heard in the past is some of them aren't comfortable with Pfizer, but they may be looking and interested in the other vaccines that have not been approved.
And certainly we've got more coming on online. But we're coming up against a break. I want to thank you, Veronica Cato, CEO of the Florida Assisted Living Association. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, this week, the final report from the Trump administration's White House Coronavirus Task Force was made public. And it recommended that Florida actually shut down bars, restaurants, and gyms across the state where mask wearing isn't being enforced 100% of the time. Now, the report said those kinds of businesses remain big vectors of coronavirus.
That report was dated January 17th, just a few days before President Trump left office. But state officials have said that another shutdown in Florida is not in the works. 305-995-1800 for your thoughts, your comments, 305-995-1800 across the state of Florida, at Florida Roundup is our Twitter handle. You can hit us up there. State Representative Tom Leake is with us now, Republican from Ormond Beach. He is the chair of the Florida House Committee on Pandemics and Public Emergencies. Representative Leake, welcome to the radio. Thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
What do you make of this recommendation out of the White House Coronavirus Task Force that Florida shut down places of business where masks cannot be on 100% of the time?
You know, it's an interesting question, because what we get is all kinds of different data points. And that's, of course, a single data point. And as elected officials and public officials, you know, we don't have the luxury of focusing in on a single aspect of the problem like a lot of the task force do. You know, it's our obligation to make sure that we're not only ensuring people's health welfare or their medical welfare, but also their financial welfare and their mental health welfare. And so unlike a lot of task force, we just don't have the luxury of focusing on a single aspect of the problem. We have to look at the overall problem and see what matches best for the state.
And so in that regard, Representative Leake, it sounds like the balance is more on the side of economic activity as opposed to public health. Not that it's one or the other, but it's a balancing act.
Absolutely a balancing act. And let me start by saying this, guys. You know, please wear your masks. Social distance, wash your hands, and be the first person to look out for your own personal health. Okay, so I want to make sure that that's clear. Outside of that, we have to worry about doing things that would shut down an economy for an extended period of time. So, for instance, if we would have done what was advocated initially, we would be looking at a nearly a 10, 11 month shutdown of an economy. There is no state, no federal, no personal economy that could survive a 10-month shutdown.
What was the recommendation to shut down the economy for 10, 11 months? I don't recall that, Representative.
Well, initially. So initially, if we would have listened to what everyone was saying out there that should be done, and remember, you know, Florida essentially shut down for a couple of weeks. But if we would have listened to some of the things that were happening, you know, out west or in the Northeast, we would have had an extended shutdown. And my point is, the extended shutdowns, you couldn't survive. The economy just couldn't survive.
Your committee, the House Committee on Pandemics and Public Emergencies, has discussed one bill protecting consumers against fraud during the pandemic. Next week, you've got a hearing scheduled to discuss a bill to limit civil liability damages for businesses if they're sued by someone claiming that those businesses were somehow negligible or negligent with COVID-19 precautions. How do these bills help address the pandemic?
Well, they address, let me make sure you understand what our committee does. Our committee is a policy committee, which means it's like every other committee in the Florida House. It's a look forward committee. So mm-hmm. Our objective is to learn the lessons of the past and adopt policy going forward that will help us with the next pandemic or the next public emergency.
Not this
so
one?
What we've, well, absolutely this one, but we're not looking. So, yeah, I mean, understand that because of the way the legislative process works, because Florida has constitutionally a part-time legislature that only meets for 6 days of a year, we are confined to the policy aspects of addressing a pandemic.
Understood. Although the legislature could have been called back into a special session, there's mechanisms for that to happen. That didn't happen. But Representative, these two bills that are discussed, I'm just curious as to how do they address the pandemic preparedness going forward in the next week, the next month, next 6 months, the next year?
Sure. And if you're considering as part of the pandemic, you know, getting people back to work and getting business moving again, these bills are focused on those things, as well as protecting people from vaccine fraud, which we saw starting to occur over on the west coast of Florida.
How does the liability bill help get people back to work?
The liability bill makes businesses comfortable to reopen. But, you know, finishing my thought, you know, these aren't the only two bills that the Pandemics Committee will have. In fact, we've only actually had one meeting. So the second meeting will come up and there'll be other things that originate in other committees, you know, like the healthcare committees. You know, there'll be other things that come through the Pandemics Committee. So it would be an inaccurate representation to assume or suggest that these are the only two bills that will come through the committee.
Understood. And I did not mean to suggest that, nor did I say that. These are the two bills, one bill that's been considered, the next bill, the liability bill, which is on the agenda for next week's meeting. Those are the only two publicly stated bills that this committee has or will consider right now. But there's additional pipeline policies coming?
Yes. Yes. Now, I would expect that the healthcare aspects will originate out of the healthcare committee. What you'll probably see originate out of our committee is some more of the emergency management, you know, policy decisions going forward. And I've got to tell you, one of the things that I've learned is that in Florida, we have the benefit of experience of many public emergencies, mostly in the nature of hurricanes.
It's true.
Probably more chemical spills out there than people realize. Hmm. But the result has been in my conversations with Secretary Moskowitz, that you know we have done a fairly good job, mostly borne by experience, of putting together the infrastructure to handle public emergencies. That policy and that plan helps us and helps inform decisions when, let's say, for instance, you have a novel issue, a novel coronavirus.
Right.
So the infrastructure is there, and what we're finding, and what I think the director will tell you is, you know, we have a lot of other states calling us, looking to Florida to try to learn from our experiences.
Hmm. Representative, stick with us. Tom Leek is with us, state representative from Ormond Beach, who is the chair of the Florida House Committee on Pandemics and Public Emergencies. You're listening to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio.
Here's a tweet from one listener. Nothing should be shut down. Mask up. The masks should be mandatory in all enclosed places. If people don't want to wear a mask, they shouldn't be allowed in. This is not difficult. Ron is in Boca Raton. He's calling the Florida Roundup. Hey, Ron, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts, I think there's just two points. I think if you look at the countries that successfully controlled this virus way back at the beginning in March, two things stand out. One, it was done at the national, federal level, whatever you want to call it. They didn't allow states or whatever, or provinces to do it. And second was they did shut down, and they did shut down for a correct amount of time. The whole country did. We would not be where we are today if we had done this correctly, but we unfortunately didn't. And we can wear masks all you want, but I don't think that's enough. Now, I'm lucky. I just got my second shot today.
Good. Oh, that's good, Ron.
Even...
Okay.
Yeah, but even I
take your point. Representative Leak, what about that? Was the lack of a coordinated strategic federal response at the beginning of all this, would we be in a better place if we had made better decisions as a country nearly a year ago? What do you think?
Well, the challenges there are we are not those other countries. We have certain protections and individual liberties that we grant our citizens in the United States that aren't, for instance, granted in other countries. And so that response that you may see where that's coming from the federal government mandating certain things would not be appropriate in the state of Florida or in any other U.S. state. Remember, the federal government only has those powers specifically enumerated to it under our Constitution. So it's not as simple as just saying that we should have done it like some other country had done it. Now, I also think it's not entirely fair or accurate to say that there was no federal coordination, because there was federal coordination. And I do believe you have to give some credit to Operation Warp Speed to where we are with the vaccine today. Now, each state kind of handled it differently. But what we're seeing play out is whether you have, you know, the absolute lockdown of L.A. County or New York City, or you had, you know, the more stringent lockdowns of South Florida, as opposed to, let's say, Santa Rosa County. You know, the numbers as they're working out, or the statistics, you know, when normalized, are about the same.
Well, and obviously nobody wants to see businesses shut down if that can be avoided. But in the short time we have left with you, why not do a statewide mask mandate so that people could feel more confident going into businesses where they know that the virus is more likely to spread?
Well, you guys have you know, citywide and countywide mask mandates down there. I mean, how did they work?
I'm actually in Jacksonville, and we have a mask mandate here. Yeah, we have one in Jacksonville, but not outside it. So people outside Duval County are frustrated by that.
So I'm a businessman. You know, like I said, Florida is a part-time legislature, but I spend my day job working in a company that has offices in about 15 different states now, including a significant presence in California. I don't know of any more stringent lockdowns than in LA County. LA County has not fared better than Miami-Dade, or not fared better than, you know, my county, Volusia.
The number of infections in Miami-Dade County is the seventh most infections on a county level in the country, fourth most deaths on a county level in the country.
Yeah, and similar stringent mask mandates and precautions put in place. And the point is, the correlation there is just after 10 months of this, you just don't see the correlation.
Representative, thanks for your time. Appreciate it here.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Tom Leak, Republican at the Florida State Legislature and the Florida House. Ormond Beach, chair of the Florida House Committee on Pandemics and Public Emergencies.
We'll keep covering this on the Roundup. Thanks for listening to the Florida Roundup this Friday, coming to you from WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Denise Royal, Heather Schatz, our show producers.
Jason Zapka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations, our technical director is Peter Meritz. We get engineering help each and every week from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Richard Ives answers the phones. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next Friday at noon.